Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Look, playoff time, college basketball time. Okay? It's that time. You have to go to Brewers Outlet, snacks, pickle bar. And beverages. I'm in the beautiful Sunbury Motors studio. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, key routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. And the Hillshire's General Store hotline is open at 1-800-795-9565, which we're going to call out now to Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Greg, welcome. It is great to have you on the show.
Steve, a pleasure to be with you, and I think we have a very good mutual friend, Mr. Tom Shredencheck.
Yes, we do, as a matter of fact. How about that? Oh, my goodness. Okay, first of all, Greg, I think the world thinks that Peyton Manning is the Peyton Manning of 3 years ago. You watch the tape. You know he's not. But what are some of the throws he's making in the last 5 weeks, Greg, that maybe he wasn't making in the first 7 or 8?
Well, it's funny you ask that, Steve, because I would say starting with the Baltimore game, which was week 14, I noticed him throwing the ball to the outside a lot like he did back with Indianapolis, those isolation routes, those deeper comeback routes, which we did not see much of through the first 13 weeks of this season. And I think we've started to see a little more of that. Now, I would say he's probably not throwing it with quite the same velocity, but his timing, his anticipation, his awareness of when to pull the trigger is as good as it's ever been.
That's the key. And also the part, is he doing things with Denver at the line of scrimmage in terms of identifying mismatches, whether it's a lineman or whether it's a receiver, as he did in Indianapolis?
Oh, for sure. That's the area in which he's second to none, arguably, in NFL history. His ability to control and dictate the running game at the line of scrimmage, I think that's one reason why Knowshon Moreno has done very well over the last 4 or 5 weeks. I think that's one reason the first time they played Baltimore, they ran the ball 43 times, if you discount two kneel downs at the end. 43 rushes in that game against Baltimore, the most of any Peyton Manning game in his career. And that's all a function of the work he does before the snap of the ball.
Because of the quarterback situation in Denver, last year with Tim Tebow, this year with Manning, have we overlooked, I mean, those who love the game haven't, but has the casual fan overlooked the quality of the Denver defense?
For sure. And in fact, I think the Denver defense is a combination of excellent personnel, really well schemed by Jack Del Rio. Obviously, Von Miller is one of the top two or three pass rushers in the league. Doomerville is very good on the other side. I think where they really excel, two areas. And it's amazing to say this given his years in the league, but since Keith Brooking became the starting middle linebacker week 6 in their base defense, they've only allowed 78 rushing yards per game. And in their nickel sub-package, they are really, really good with two players who a lot of people might not be aware of. Wesley Woodyard is a linebacker in their nickel, and Chris Harris is their slot corner. He's also been starting because of the injury to Tracy Porter, but he's basically their slot corner in their nickel. And those two players, I think, have played extremely well this season.
Obviously, in broadcasting Penn State football, I have obviously a lot of conversations with Bill O'Brien. He puts a premium, a high premium, on accuracy in a quarterback. He can talk arm strength and things like that, but accuracy, okay? When you break down the quarterbacks in the playoffs, which ones fall into the role of accuracy because they're providing yards after the catch or that back shoulder throw that's needed, and which ones don't quite make that mark in terms of accuracy, in your opinion, on tape?
Well, I think you go with Manning and Brady, and it's one reason why they're Manning and Brady.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, and it's funny you mention that, Steve, and then I'll just get back to you. I remember having a conversation with Troy Aikman a number of years ago, and he said to me, you can do everything right as a quarterback, but if you can't throw it where you want to, you really don't have anything. And it's so true. And I'm glad you mentioned yards after catch, because most people believe that's a function of the receiver. It's a function of the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And the term I always use for accuracy is ball location. And the precise ball location quarterbacks allow receivers to run after the catch. Of the quarterbacks left in this in the playoffs, I'm just trying to think. I think Joe Flacco tends to be a little erratic with his accuracy.
Right.
When he's sharp, Flacco is a great arm talent who can make unbelievable throws. I think Matt Ryan is solid with his accuracy. You know, you get to this level, and it's hard to be at this level if your quarterback's not throwing the ball well.
Baltimore's defense, I know they've been able to get personnel back, okay, and by getting Ray Lewis back, they have Suggs back. Can you put a premium when you watch Ed Reed on what he means, especially with personnel back?
Well, I think Reed is a classic example of a guy who's so incredibly smart with film study. Not many safeties who've played this game recognize receiver alignments, what I like to call receiver distribution and location. How many receivers are aligned to each side of the formation, and just as important, who they are. I think he recognizes that better than most. And more importantly, he recognizes what route combinations are run based on that. And I think that's one reason he's been so good. We talk about quarterbacks anticipating. Ed Reed is a phenomenal anticipator from the deep safety position.
Houston, when you've looked at Houston in recent weeks, and of course the base question is, what has happened to them? So offensively, what has happened to them, and maybe in particular Matt Schaub?
Yeah, I think that their passing game is a function of their run game, maybe more so than any team in the league. They integrate run looks with pass as well as anyone. And they've not been able, with those looks, to create the explosive plays that they did earlier in the season. And if they can't create the explosive plays off run-pass action, then they're somewhat limited, because their offensive line are not great pass protectors when they have to do straight drop-back passing, and that's not Matt Schaub's strength. So their inability to make explosive pass plays off run action has really limited and condensed their offense.
J.J. Watt, I always was impressed when I saw him against when Penn State played Wisconsin. What do you see in him? I'm not just talking about the leaping ability and blocking balls, but what kind of first step does he have, Greg?
Well, it's not only that, Steve. It's his ability to use his hands.
Yes.
I don't think I've seen a guy use a swim move and a club move as well as J.J. Watt. In fact, the swim move he uses you would never even teach, because he swims outside away from plays and then is so athletic with closing speed that he then makes the play. You would never teach that. He's just one of those rare athletes.
In fact, when he gets to the next level, Greg, I want you to take a look at a kid from Penn State named Jordan Hill. He's going to be in the Senior Bowl. He uses his hands as well as any defensive lineman I've seen in college football as a defensive tackle. So take a look at that.
Well, I'm just starting to do a little college work, but I haven't gotten to Penn State. It's, you know, as you know, it takes time to watch the coaching film.
Yeah, a long time, because you get the two views. Which do you prefer, end zone view or side view on a coach's tape?
Well, they're totally different, because what the sideline view gives you are route combinations, coverages,
right,
and what the end zone view gives you, obviously, is offensive and defensive line play. So you really see two totally different things when you look.
Yeah, no question. Let's get to the Patriots now. The guy you mentioned, premium on accuracy, and as Bill O'Brien will tell you, it's Tom Brady. The combinations they're putting together on offense right now, how impressed are you by the Patriots' combinations right now in their offense, especially if they can get Gronkowski to play the way he normally does?
You know, it's funny you mention that, because one of the things people who don't follow the Patriots closely might not be aware of is how much this year they put Brady under center with multiple tight end formations.
Absolutely.
And using the run game as the foundation. And that's the way they beat Houston when they beat them on Monday night, week 15. They've been really good with their hard run action with Brady under center. And most people think about them as spread offense, Brady in the shotgun. It's they've been really good with more traditional run action this year.
Okay, let's get to Seattle and Atlanta. If I put the matchup together of Julio Jones and Roddy White against Browner and Sherman, who wins that matchup?
Well, I would like White and Jones,
right.
But I think that Atlanta's going to do some things. We've charted all of Roddy White's catches, and he's had 18 catches this year, Steve, of more than 20 yards.
Mm-hmm.
13 of them have come from unconventional formations where he's not just aligned outside the numbers. And that's one thing Atlanta does. They move him around. He's the Z, the movement receiver, the receiver off the line of scrimmage. And I would expect to see that. There'll be times they'll just line up because they think their guys can win, but they'll move Roddy White around quite a bit.
Matt Ryan, you mentioned him in the answer about accuracy before. Now, obviously the quarterback is going to get scrutiny when a team does not have, quote, playoff success.
Right.
Still, the maturation of Matt Ryan, because he was thrown into the breach right away, what kind of maturation have you seen within his game?
I think Matt Ryan has just gotten better and better at what he does. And let me answer it this way. He is mostly a pocket quarterback who needs functional space in the pocket. And that means excellent pass protection. That means the ball has to come out quickly. And when he does not have functional space, when the pocket starts to close in, that's when he loses some of his efficiency, and that's when he's had problems, Steve. So the key for that offense, and they've clearly morphed into a passing offense this year, is they must provide him with space. He must be comfortable in the pocket. And then I think very, very effective. And I really believe in this game you're going to see a ton of no-huddle by the Falcons.
Well, last year when I had one of the votes for the All-Big Ten team, and last year I know Monte Ball ended up winning Big Ten Player of the Year, and I put him second. The guy I voted number one was Russell Wilson because I just thought he was the difference maker in the entire conference a year ago. To see him now, and I know he's 5'11", but that never swayed me in terms of what he could do on the next level. What are you seeing in terms of his poise, and how many, do you get a feel, Greg, as to how many of the chess pieces on the field he can see at this young age?
Well, I think he does a couple of things really well. He's very intuitive at the position. So when he does move, and he probably moves too much, Steve, but again,
okay.
I don't know what he can see and what he can't see. But when he does move, he has a very good feel for throwing the ball on the run. And no quarterback has more attempts or more yards outside the pocket than Wilson this year. The other thing he does really well is he knows when not to force it. He does not force passes. And a lot of NFL coaches, as you know, will tell you, it's just as important not to turn the ball over as anything. That more games are really lost through turnovers than won because of good plays. And he has such an intuitive feel for what works and what doesn't work. And the final thing I think he does really well is he throws a really good deep ball, and they get a lot of one-on-one on the outside because of their run game.
Yes, that shortstop arm he has.
No, he's got a good arm.
Oh, yeah, he does.
You know, I was skeptical like everybody else, Steve. I've been doing this a long time with the NFL, and when you see 5'10 and a half, and I've met Russell Wilson, and there's no question he's an unbelievable kid. That's not open to debate.
Right.
But you just look at a guy 5'10 and a half, and history tells you that that's not necessarily going to work.
Right.
So I was skeptical just like everybody else.
Right. Greg, thanks. Appreciate it. Greg Cosell, NFL. Did you get enough there, Kevin? Did you write notes now?
My head's swimming.
Just want to make sure that you're in the game.
There's a lot of great info there. You could tell, as you said the other day, matter of fact, I think it was yesterday, he's watched some film.
He watches a ton of film. Come on, man.
He has watched some film.
He's watched a ton. No. At the, there you go. At the, that
should get everybody up to date on everything. Okay? All right. That should get everybody up to date on everything. Okay? We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
Okay, we're not done yet with Greg Cosell. We're going to go back on the line with him. We needed to take a break there, and we did. And now back to Greg. Greg, welcome back. 49ers. 49ers are a team. Nine of the 11 defensive starters, Greg, have played 90% of the snaps. Okay? What does that mean to the cohesion and continuity of that defense and the fact they can read each other?
Oh, that's really big. Keep one thing in mind, though. When they played Green Bay week one, it was the only game this year in which their predominant sub-package was dime, and they played Parrish Cox more than 50 snaps.
That's right.
And obviously that was because of Green Bay's excellent receivers, because they've got really four wideouts that are potentially problematic that can be on the field. It wouldn't surprise me to see them do that again. They play a lot of man coverage, and it'll be real interesting in this game to see how that plays out, because Aaron Rodgers, one of the things he does very well is makes plays outside of structure. He's not necessarily a runner, although he can run, but when he gets outside the pocket, no one throws the ball at the intermediate and deeper levels better than Rodgers.
Yeah, no question about that. And back to the Niners defense. Jason Smith goes out. Alden Smith has not been as productive.
No.
What's the reasoning?
Well, he got a number of his sacks this year on stunts right behind Justin Smith, and Justin Smith is the best in the league at attacking and eating up two guys. And then Alden Smith would just loop behind him, and obviously with Justin Smith being out, they can't quite do that.
Now, the next part is Colin Kaepernick. As he has developed, what are the throws that Jim Harbaugh is allowing him to make now and Greg Roman's allowing him to make now that maybe they wouldn't have allowed him to make maybe 5-6 weeks ago?
Well, it's funny you say that, because the first game he started was the Bears, and they came out very aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he's making any different throws now. I think people have to be aware that he's not a polished pocket quarterback at this point. I think he's a little quick to leave, but he can run too. So obviously that's a burden for a defense. But the thing that stands out, and I don't know if you got a chance to see him in college at all, Steve, but he's got a big-time arm.
Yeah.
I mean, he spins it really well, and he there's not a throw he can't make. He gives the 49ers offense far more dimensions in the pass game.
I mentioned earlier Ed Reed with Baltimore. What does Charles Woodson mean with him returning to the Green Bay defensive lineup?
Well, I don't think anybody plays in the slot in a sub-package situation better than Woodson. And it'll be interesting to see how the 49ers play offense. I mean, obviously, they'll have three wide receivers on the field sometimes, but I think that you might see the Niners spread it out at a base personnel and get their tight ends, Walker and Davis, outside and their wide receivers inside, get Crabtree working on linebackers A.J. Hawk or Brad Jones on the inside. I think that's advantage 49ers.
I think James Jones had multiple drops over the years. This year, I think he had one. Randall Cobb is obviously a great athlete, Jordy Nelson. But getting Greg Jennings back, what has been the domino effect for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay offense with Jennings coming back?
Well, it forces defenses to go deeper into their secondary, and you get better matchups, because now you can work what matchup you want against a third corner, a fourth corner. So that's the domino effect. You get better matchups because you force the defense to go deeper into their secondary.
Greg, an absolute pleasure. I know you're very busy, and we appreciate it very, very much, and I look forward to talking to you again down the line. This is fascinating.
Steve, I really appreciate it. Thanks. Anytime.
All your notes set, Kevin?
Yeah, but like I said before, now you're going to pick the same teams I'm going to pick based on that. So, you know, it's not going to do me any good. But I love the analysis there at the quarterback situation at San Francisco.
Well, I think he's doing more. I think you're seeing him make a few more throws. I think they did a couple things. They were aggressive with the package early. They've always been aggressive with him running, but there are a couple more throws he's making now that he wasn't making before. But at the same time, you know how I feel about adjustments. And when it's your first time through and you're very talented, you have the advantage. And suddenly the league takes
does what Greg does, breaks down every single tape and says, okay, wait a minute, he's not quite so good at this. Let's force him to do that. And then if you're really good, if you're one of the better ones, after they adjust to you, you then adjust. And at that point, it becomes cat and mouth the rest of your career because you're smart enough to know how to adjust. Kaepernick will be interesting in watching his development because Greg's right. His arm is a superior arm. You watch him throw the ball, that is as tight a spiral as you'll see in the National Football League. I mean, tight.
But it's a pretty big gamble here for Harbaugh. I mean, going setting the experience aside.
It's not a gamble now, Kevin. No, it's not a gamble now because he didn't make the change 2 weeks ago. He made the change a month and a half, 2 months ago. He made the change a long time ago. Now remember, Alex Smith played very well against Green Bay in the opener. He played great, in fact. So I don't know.
I mean, if Kaepernick plays well in this game, I can tell you what's coming up, though. What's coming up is going to be a quarterback controversy in San Francisco, and somebody might be expendable.
Why? What? There is no quarterback controversy. There's none. He's the starting quarterback. I mean,
somebody might be expendable.
Okay.
How's
when's
that?
When's the last time Alex Smith played?
Well, that's been quite some time.
It's
right.
Done.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's over with. Kaput. Okay?
Didn't look at it that way.
It's like saying that with... It's like saying Aaron Rodgers has a quarterback controversy with Harrell. No.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. It's a Friday. We're brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. It's the week. Just talked extensively with. I didn't realize Greg and I had a mutual friend, Greg Cosell from NFL Films. That's called breaking it down and knocking it around. And if you don't have a complete handle now on the four games in the NFL playoffs this weekend, I can't help you anymore. Simple as that. I can't.
That was pretty thorough.
Yeah. I mean, he's thorough. I just asked the questions. You know, about matchups and things like that, you know. Although I think the part about 9 out of 11 starters playing 90% of the snaps for the 49er defense. Research department did a good job on that one. You're angry now, aren't you?
Not at all.
No, you're pouting. I can tell.
Not at all. I'm just trying to figure out how pouting. I'm going to come up with an extra, you know, 3 wins this week.
Here we go. Let's see. All the records Pete Rose set are recognized at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. His name is all over the hall. He just doesn't have a bust. Every clubhouse in baseball is a sign reminding everyone that gambling in baseball will be dealt with severely. That's true. That's absolutely true.
That was an email from signed by Reno.
Yep. No, that's absolutely accurate. I am not in any way a Pete Rose fan. I mean, not even close. So I'm not sitting there going, oh, yeah, he's one of the, nah, I just kind of, after 23, 24 years. You know, I mean, maybe you get soft. I don't know. Maybe it's just me being a softy in my older age. I don't know.
You, softy?
Yeah. No, hey, I'm a grandfather, for goodness sakes. You got to see me be a softie. I think lessons are, first of all, he's banned from baseball completely. Okay. Reno makes a really good point. So it's not, I'm not in any way, shape, or form.
I just think at some point, it's time.
Well, you know, I never thought he should be out of the Hall of Fame anyway as a player.
For example, how many people love Muhammad Ali? How about that?
Sure.
Let's go with that. Yeah, but he took his gold, you know, that whole sham about the gold medal and the, you know, they gave him back his gold medal at the 96 Atlanta Olympics, right? Remember that moment?
Sure. Yep.
Great and emotional it was. I mean, what'd they do? Dredge the Louisville River? You know what the story is, don't you?
Well, he tossed it, didn't he?
He was so mad at the United States that, yeah, you know, and how they treated African Americans, he took his gold medal and he threw it into the Louisville River. Really? Okay, I mean, that's his choice. I understand. You know, if he's that upset about it. I'll say this, though. The country ended up treating him really, really good for the most part, except, obviously, he never should have been stripped of his title. It was an emotional time, a different time. But he did this in 1960. Before him, when he was still Cassius Marcellus Clay. And everybody's like, oh, isn't that wonderful? It's great, the whole thing. Well, okay, well, it happened 36 years later, and he got his gold medal back. Well, that's great. But the reason he didn't have the gold medal is because of himself. Now, am I downing him for that? No, I'm just explaining. But you have to explain the story. You know, everybody gets all syrupy and saucy about it. Okay, and I'm glad he got it back. Okay, I'm happy about that because, you know, people make mistakes. He made a mistake. He knows he made a mistake. If he didn't think he made a mistake, he wouldn't have accepted the one they gave him. Correct?
I think that's a safe comment, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, Pete Rose made terrible mistakes. He should be banned completely from baseball, no doubt. But when it comes to recognizing his accomplishments as a player, in which there appears to be no taint on that at all, the softy in me is saying that it's time. Maybe I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, tell me. John in Shamokin's about to tell me I'm wrong. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. It's your job to tell me I'm wrong, John.
Well, I'm just I'm listening to the Pete Rose conversation, and I guess the way you look at it is that he cheated and he's banned. So I don't see any difference between the gambling on baseball and the steroid. You cheated either way. So I think if he's banned, everybody that's accused of steroids should also be banned. I know it's a little harder to pick out the steroids, you know.
Yeah, it is.
Cheating.
Yeah, but you know what? For example, let's take Roger Clemens. Now, they took his case to trial where they had the burden of proof. And according to a jury, they didn't prove it. Is he off the hook?
Then I'd say, yeah, if they didn't prove it. But there are so many other guys, Palmeiro and,
yes,
you know,
Bonds.
Sosa and Bonds. I mean, yep. Bonds went from a skinny little kid to the Incredible Hulk, you know?
Yeah, no
I mean,
doubt.
Nobody no put up numbers over it, the age of 35 like he did.
Right, and he says, you know, I used the cream. I didn't use. No, I was using the cream, and blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
I think that's about as lame.
Black seed oil.
yeah, sure you were. Now on Rose, see, I draw the line on Rose here. There appears to be, John, from all the research I've done, nothing about his actual playing career tainted by this.
Right.
It is as a manager. That's why I'm struggling with him, and I'm no fan of Pete Rose. I'm not sitting there going, I'm not his biggest advocate or anything like that. But, see, I'm trying to be fair here in terms of drawing a line as to when he did it and how he did it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hear some of the people
that's why I struggle with him.
Right, because, like you said, he in his career, he didn't, you know, he wasn't accused of gambling until he was a manager. Well, then they're trying to say for Bonds and Clemens, well, before steroids, if they didn't use steroids, the years they played, you know, maybe they would have still may have had Hall of Fame numbers. They didn't get accused of steroids until later in their career. So, I mean, if he's banned for cheating, you're banned for cheating. I just, that's how I, but if, like you said, Clemens was acquitted. So, that's just my point of view.
Right. No, John, that's no, I believe me. Somebody raked me over the coals pretty hard in an email, right, Kevin? I mean, like,
yeah.
like I'm in the Hall of Shame or something like
the
that.
The Hall of Shame was the word, yes.
Yeah, Hall of Shame. I don't think I'm that evil, but that's up to them.
I found it kind of funny, but that's just me, you know.
Yeah, no, I know. It's so that's why
okay,
I appreciate
well,
the point of view.
Thanks for your time.
No, John, thank you for your time and for your opinion.
All right, thank you.
No, he makes good points.
Well,
and the person who wrote the email, by the way, made good points too.
Sure.
That is not I am not in any way. That's what I like, the give and take. You don't have to put me in the Hall of Shame and be insulting about it. I think my career has been a little bit above that. But at the same time, you're entitled to have an opposite opinion from me, and have me respect it. I'm not going to respect the part where you're going to get personal about it. I don't think I was that evil the other day.
I have a question for you, though. Why is the Pete Rose thing different than, say, Mickey Mantle, Willie Mays?
Because after their careers were over with, they became involved with gambling casinos.
Okay.
What's wrong with Pete Rose is that he was an active participant in the game. He could affect the game and affect the outcome of the game potentially by moves that he made. Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle signed on with, I think, was it Resorts International in Atlantic City back in the, I want to say, the early 80s. Well, they were associated with a gambling casino, but they had no association with baseball in terms of having a job. Pete Rose could look at Rob Dibble and say, hey, look, I need you for a fifth consecutive day out there to pitch the ninth inning, and Dibble's arm could be hanging down to the ground, okay? But Pete needs to win this one because Daddy needs a new pair of shoes.
Well, and I never bought into that until when you and I first talked about this over the summer, and I understand that a little bit more now. But my question is this. Mays and Mantle, even though the situation may not be the same, my point in question was, why can't we look at this again with Pete Rose and say, okay, this has been long enough. A lifetime ban seems to be a little extreme here.
No, the lifetime ban is not extreme. The lifetime ban is right on the mark. He should never be associated with a Major League Baseball team again, because what he did was wrong in the true definition of it.
But he can't even go into a baseball stadium. No, a great example is Mike Schmidt's retirement.
Sure
he couldn't go.
He can go. He can buy a ticket. He's not above buying tickets. Okay, he can buy tickets just like you and me. He can go. Okay? But what he did is the definition in sports of wrong. Now, I'm talking about the Hall of Fame. I'm talking about his playing accomplishments, which appear to be not tainted at all by the scandal. And I can differentiate between Pete Rose, the manager, who did wrong, and Pete Rose, the player, who over two decades played at as high a level as you could ask a player to play at. Okay? So that's where I'm differentiating. Just like the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield can differentiate between John Wooden, the player at Purdue, and John Wooden, the basketball coach, and induct him twice. I mean, Phil Jackson will be in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, but not for his career with the Knicks. And he was a good player with the Knicks. Decent player, not great, awesome, incredible. He was good. Okay, but he's going to go into the Hall of Fame as a coach. Okay?
But
Michael Jordan's not going to go in the Hall of Fame as an owner.
But if you have a ban from baseball, if you're banned from baseball, then I'm sorry. If that ban is going to be any, if you're going to have any truth to that ban, then he shouldn't be in the Hall. I don't think so. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame for what he did as a player. If you want to ban him from baseball because what he did as a manager, that's fine. But the way the ban from baseball happened, he shouldn't be in the Hall the way it was set up. You follow what I'm trying to say? I mean, the way it was set up, he shouldn't be in the Hall because of the way Giamatti worded everything.
Look, him not being in doesn't bother me. All right, let's start with that, okay? I don't sit there and go, boy, it's a real shame he's not in there. But I think if I get the ballot now after 24 years, all right,
I think I'm intelligent enough to differentiate between Pete Rose, the player, and Pete Rose, the manager. Okay? What he did as a manager was exponentially wrong. Okay? He put careers at risk, potentially, because he managed recklessly because his personal stake was more than just winning the game. Part of being a great manager is that you manage the season and not just the moment. Okay? When you get to late September and early and get into October, now you're managing moments. But you have to manage a season. What he did was so wrong and put careers at risk, okay, for his own personal gain. You can't do that. That's why he should never be allowed around. But he can go to any, Kevin, he can go to any stadium he wants, okay? They all have a ticket office.
Yeah, but to not allow him to show up for an honorary, to honor a former teammate just sounds silly.
I'm sorry, what he did was wrong. Okay? That's part of the penalty. And I know that the baseball people are like, they absolutely do not want him in Shrine because they don't want him making a speech. Roger, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Well, I thought I could relate something from the NFL Hall of Fame process to the Pete Rose conversation. I forget who it was, but somebody who has a vote and is in the room when they pick the Hall of Famers for the NFL said, you know, a general statement is you can't write the history of the NFL without mentioning so-and-so. And if you apply that to baseball, there's no way you could keep Pete Rose out. You can't, you know what I mean? There's just no way you can keep Rose out, especially as a player, if we want to go with the, you know, the gambling incident came during his managerial career. You can't write the history of baseball without Pete Rose.
And that standard was applied to Paul Hornung. And Paul Hornung is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he was suspended an entire year for betting on his own team with the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
I have not heard a single person ever call up the show and say, Paul Hornung should be out.
Right. Right. So that's one thing. And then if I can switch, just to move away from the P. Rose conversation.
Yeah.
We've had so much RG3 talk this week, and it's time to stop second-guessing Mike Shanahan and reliving the should he have come out of the game or not. But I'm going to make a statement, and I'm a Redskins fan. In transparency, I follow them probably more closely than most anyone who could be listening right now. The Redskins are going to be better in 2013, regardless of when Robert Griffin comes back. Kirk Cousins, that's the angle of this that has been talked about a lot. Kirk Cousins is quite capable of leading the Redskins offense. Kirk Cousins holds the Redskins rookie record for most passing yards in a game. He passed for more yards against the Cleveland Browns than RG3 did in any game this year. The Redskins don't beat the Ravens without Kirk Cousins. And I think RG3 knows that, too, a little bit. I think he knows that the Redskins aren't going to go 0-4 with Kirk Cousins as a starting quarterback. Also, the Redskins get back next year from injury. They get back Brian Arakpo. They get back Adam Carricker. They get Brandon Merriweather. They get Jonathan Goff, the linebacker they acquired from the Giants. They get Tanard Jackson back from suspension. They get Fred Davis back from an injury. They get Roy Helu back from an injury. Mm-hmm. And that's before they've even hit the free agent market. And they don't have as much money to spend with the salary cap penalty. But still, the Redskins get six or seven guys back who will probably start for them. And a lot of guys this year who started and probably weren't meant to are just going to make them a deeper team. The Redskins are a better team in 2013.
The Redskins getting those players back from injury, Roger, that's the equivalent of free agency by having them just getting them back. Okay, and that's I made the same statement about the Phillies last summer about how they would get guys back. It would be like acquiring big time guys in trades.
Yeah, well, but the Redskins are getting guys back during their 20s.
Exactly.
Fred Davis in his 20s, Brian Arakpo in his 20s.
Yep.
The Redskins are getting a lot of young players back with their best years ahead of them, unlike the Phillies, who are getting a lot of players back with their best years behind them.
behind them. And you know how I feel about Kirk Cousins and how extremely supportive and smart I was.
Yeah.
I thought the Redskins when they drafted him that day. I mean, I said that the day they drafted him.
I'm excited. This is going to be it's going to be a different kind of football, but Kirk Cousins will be fine.
And they have a chance to be the dominant team in the NFC East for the next 5 years.
Yep, and they're going to get quality quarterback play.
Yep.
No matter which one starts. And I hope RG3 has a successful comeback. He's a special player, and I hope that he has a complete physical comeback and that they tailor the playbook a little bit to prolong his career.
Agreed. Well said.
Yep.
Roger, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
While your favorite team is driving down the field, you're driving all around looking for a new car, which is driving you crazy. Well, Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices. Our North 4th Street Auto Plaza is stocked full of Ford, Lincoln, and Hyundais. We sell over a couple hundred cars a month. Why? Service and price. With our lowest price promise, if you can find a better price and another dealer on the used car you want, we'll beat it. That's a promise. Shop the largest Ford dealership online 24/7 at sunburymotors.com. Let's stop in and test drive Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury and our Kia dealership at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And be ready to tackle the largest inventory and our lowest price promise, selling more cars and satisfying more customers since 1915. Sunbury Motors. SunburyMotors.com. The winning team.
Welcome back. Our apologies to Dave and Sunbury has been holding, but Dave, we're going to close out the show here at this point, and we'll get your call on Monday. Appreciate that. Eddie Lacy, D. Milner, DJ Fluker, all leaving Alabama for the NFL, and they should. I think DJ Fluker is one of the top tackles I've seen in person in a while. Eddie Lacy, the kind of power back, I think, with speed and some quickness that will do very well in the NFL. He won't be a superstar, but he'll do very well in the NFL. And you know what I think about D. Milner. I felt he was the number one corner in college football to begin with. And for some inexplicable reason, the guy that the Eagles are trying to hire tried to attack him all night long. It's like, what are you doing? I'm still baffled by that. You do know that's Milner over there, right? I mean,
they do now.
You wanted to pull Brian Kelly aside as a point. You know 28's Milner, right? you know that? Your quarterback's very experienced, and he's Tim Tebow, CFL. That's his only option.
He's not going to Jacksonville.
That's his only option, I think, realistically. And look, other quarterbacks have gone to the CFL, and they've honed their game. Joe Theismann, okay? Warren Moon. Now, Moon's a different quarterback than Tebow. Moon's just a pure thrower, great thrower. But he was also in an era where a lot of people were looking at African-American quarterbacks saying, are you sure? It's like, you know, that lunacy.
But the real question is, will he have value to the TiVo folks if he goes to the CFL?
To the who folks?
TiVo. You see all the TiVo commercials with TiVo in it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think he'll sell tickets in the CFL. How about that?
I think he will, too. Like
Doug Flutie did. But Doug Flutie is always a far superior thrower than Tim Tebow. He'll be in Altoona April 16th. I guess I'm compelled to go, huh?
Yep.
Greg Cosell, thank you. Guy Cipriano, thank you. Kevin Hurd, thank you. Thank you, all of you out there, even those who don't like me anymore. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury.